You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Brewers log a win against the dastardly Chicago Cubs 4-1. That game ended just before we got on the air at 4 p.m. Brewers coming back to Milwaukee for a three-game homestand against the San Francisco Giants. Those games sure to be sold out and a bunch of fun, a Bob Uecker Memorial and Life Remembrance, Life Celebration on Sunday, Uecker Umbrella Giveaway. It's going to be a great weekend here in Milwaukee, weather looking spectacular. In other national news, this breaking just a few hours ago, the State Department and Donald Trump said Thursday that it's reviewing the records of more than 55 million foreigners who hold valid U.S. visas for potential revocation or deportable violations of immigration rules. In a written answer to a question posed by the Associated Press this afternoon, the department said that all U.S. visa holders are subject to, quote, continuous vetting with an eye toward any indication that they would be ineligible for a visa. Should such information be found, the department said the visa will be revoked, and if the visa holder is in the United States, he or she would be subject to deportation. 55 million? That should be an interesting review. In other breaking national news this afternoon, in case you missed it at the top of the show, a federal judge ruling that President Donald Trump's former lawyer, Alina Haba, has been unlawfully serving as the top federal prosecutor in New Jersey. The judge was pretty clear about this, saying that the administration used a series of novel legal and personnel moves to keep her in the job and concluding that she is not legally serving. He put that ruling on hold while appeals may proceed. So watch that space. That one's going to be a very interesting case. I think standing that was raised in that case is indisputable, which has been an issue in other legal matters, changing actions by the Trump administration, including certain personnel actions. Right now, it is my privilege and honor to bring back to the Maggie Dawn Show Metropolitan D.C. Police Officer Daniel Hodges. Welcome back, Daniel. It's great to have you.
Hey, Maggie. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for making time. I know you're going to work this evening. The president announcing today that he's going to be joining potentially D.C. police or National Guard while on patrol. Does that make your job easier? I would think not.
Yeah, I don't see how that would make my job easier. That just diverts a lot of resources that could be used elsewhere to his protection. And, you know, calling a patrol is inaccurate, I would say. You know, I don't think he's going to be taking any 911 calls. It's a photo op. He's going to be driving around looking, trying to look tough with the military, but no, that's not patrol.
Maybe a little cosplay a la Christy Gnome, you know, Ice Barbie. And folks, we just want to make clear, both for Daniel's sake and ours here at Civic Media, Officer Hodges appearing on the show today, of course, in his personal capacity, does not speak for DC Metro Police, just himself. I find the performative aspect of all of this has been deeply concerning for me. You're on the ground every day. You're going to work tonight. Has anything changed for you since Donald Trump deployed National Guard's folks as well as other law enforcement? What is your day-to-day? Has it changed your day-to-day work? Or is it still the same chain of command? Tell us how it's going.
Yeah, for me personally, it hasn't really changed anything. I still take my orders from the same people. I still have the same assignment. And because of when and where I work in the city, it's very unlikely I'm going to find any federal officers or a military personnel out there. So, you know, for me, it's business as usual, but obviously that's not the case citywide.
Have you heard from some of your colleagues? Have folks been concerned about this? What's the morale? What's the mood like for you and your folks, the frontline DC Metro police officers? What has their feeling been since Donald Trump announced this push in DC?
Well, I can really only speak for myself. MPD is a very diverse organization. So, you know, if you took a poll, you'd find a lot of different opinions. I think a lot of people imagine the police to be just one big conservative block, like a monolith. But what I found to be most surprising is how apolitical people are, the officers are, and how, well, this isn't really unique to officers or police, but essentially selfish. They're more worried about how this will affect them.
Ooh, Dan, your sound just blinked out. Ooh, I think we lost Dan. Oh, there you're back. We lost you. You just said that, like most employees, when you show up for your job, you're more concerned about yourself and what your job consists of and getting paid fair and going to work safely, all those kinds of things. I don't want to speak for you, Dan. Please finish your thought.
Right. Yeah. So that's true for most people across every industry and profession. That's, you know, police are no different. So I think everyone's just wondering how this is going to affect them. I would love to see more concern about society as a whole, but it's not everyone's thinking at that level, I guess.
I just want to get your take. Donald Trump said that there's a set of new facts in D.C. There's an emergency that needs federal government intervention. What's your take on that, Dan? Is there something different about D.C. in these last few weeks than in December or even last year at this time? Is there, in fact, a crime emergency in your view as a D.C. Metropolitan Police officer in Washington, D.C.?
I mean, there's definitely crime in D.C. I'm not going to say there's not. Whether it's bad or not depends on your point of view, your point of comparison. I don't think that anything in recent memory constitutes an emergency. I don't think that federalization offers any real benefits. I don't think that Trump's desire to take over DC law enforcement is born from any great concern over DC residents' safety. So yeah, there's crime, and you know, I'm grateful for any actual help we get, but this is not, I have not seen a whole lot of that happening.
Have you gotten any sort of SOPs, standard operating procedures, any sort of procedural policy guidance about how to interface with National Guard's members or how to work with, we've seen folks that appear to be FBI agents on the streets in DC doing what is termed generically as quality of life policing. Any directions about how to work with those folks that is different from your typical chain of command?
I personally have not gotten any policy updates, anything like that. I can't really speak to policy in my personal capacity.
Of course.
So, but there's, I know that the feds are working more with specific units. That's the extent of my knowledge there.
Specific units within MPD?
Correct.
So, and I would assume units with specific sort of purposes that may be more appropriately aligned for interfacing with federal governmental agencies. Those interfaces aren't themselves unusual. There are circumstances in any local police department's course of business where they will liaise and coordinate with federal law enforcement. Unless I'm mistaken, Officer Hodges, that's not unusual in and of itself.
Right. Yeah, we work with federal partners all the time, which is part of why this federalization order isn't really necessary. There's nothing about it there's nothing about assigning federal resources to DC that requires federalization. You know, he could have done that at any time. Federalization is just so that, you know, he's in the headlines, he's in control.
Do you think that's the motivation here? Do you, and we've had President J.D., or not President, heaven help us, Vice President J.D. Vance today saying that this is the blueprint for numerous other cities across the country. Stephen Miller doubling down on that. They had some sort of press gaggle in Union Station today. Is this just about getting headlines and appeasing the base in your view? Is there any practical benefit to this at all in your view?
I think that's a big part of it. I think that, you know, the federalization order has three big components to it, right? It's the assigning MPD officers to, you know, assist the federal agencies with whatever they want. There's the military aspect, the National Guard, and there's, you know, the leadership, there's and the actual federal officers. So I served in the Virginia National Guard for 6 years. I can tell you that soldiers are not trained for law enforcement. Soldiers are trained to fight and win wars. They are trained to close with and destroy the enemy. We are not at war in DC. So soldiers are not trained to conduct traffic stops. They're not trained in DC code. They're not trained to mediate family disputes. This isn't their lane. This isn't what they're here for. So all these National Guard troops are just going to be standing around and rolling around in their Humvees, not really contributing. They're just, it's a photo op for them. Well, not for them, but for their leadership, and political leadership. With regards to the federal officers, you know, some of them are going to have the skill sets necessary to help, but a lot of them are investigators. Their work is behind a desk, and they don't have the saturation of experience on the street to be immediately helpful in capacity for urban law enforcement. And then there's the leadership aspect, which is, you know, Donald Trump and his lieutenants sort of taking control over DC. And I really don't think Donald Trump or whoever he decides to be in command has any keen insight into the deployment of urban law enforcement resources that our own law enforcement leaders don't have. I don't know why he would think that, or I don't know why they believe that they would know better than our own people.
Yeah, that's it. Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got DC Metro Police Officer Daniel Hodges with us. Again, he's appearing in his personal capacity. I've got a number of friends who are cops with Milwaukee Police that have been cops for decades. And what I've heard from them is that police officers have an intimate familiarity with the communities, the street layouts, the different community members, the hotspots, all kinds of tools. And that, again, when you are of and by a community, when you work in that community for a long time, as well as the unique elements of urban policing that simply these folks from the federal government or National Guard don't have. And it sounds like that is a fair concern. It's just the familiarity and the different tools and tactics and elements of urban policing. We're going to come back. Officer Hodges is considered a hero of January 6th, and I'd like to get his thoughts on what actually makes a hero. We continue our discussion with DC Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Very humbled to be joined by DC Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges. He was there defending our nation's capital on January 6th. And I wanted to start with this basic level set. I'm not a police officer and I've never served our nation's military. So I start with thanks to you and everyone who has done so in their past or continues to serve our communities and our country in that way. To me, January 6th looked like an emergency. Everyday DC life, a large urban metropolitan US city that will always have some degree of crime, that doesn't look like an emergency to me. Would you have preferred that Donald Trump deploy the DC National Guard on January 6th much earlier? Do you view January 6th as an actual emergency? And how does that compare to the deployment of the National Guard now and the so-called emergency that Donald Trump has used as the reason to send in National Guards men and women today?
Yeah, I would say that the insurrection on January 6th at the Capitol absolutely qualifies as an emergency to which the National Guard would be much better suited to assist than National Guard is. Instructed in ride control, and that's something that definitely would have been helpful to all those bodies. I don't know why they weren't deployed much sooner when it was obvious that we needed all the help we could get. And compared to today, when the National Guard is being sent from all over the country to just stand around, stand around on the Mall, stand around in Georgetown or Chinatown, all these high visibility, low crime rate areas. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know why they're there.
Do you think that there is a misallocation of these forces from the federal government, be they National Guard or other federal law enforcement? There's been reporting from, I believe it was the Washington Post, kind of did a heat map. It looked like there was a lot of deployment in areas that, as to use your language, Officer Hodges, high visibility but low crime. I can't make sense of it.
Yeah, that lends credence to the idea that this isn't really about crime. This is about, optics, to use the preferred nomenclature. This is about what it looks like. This is about sticking it to a liberal city that hates Donald Trump. This is about, sticking it to the libs, which isn't really helpful to crime or crime reduction.
Mm. Officer Hodges, you've recounted on this program a couple of times, and folks will put the links to my prior interviews and discussions with Officer Hodges in our show notes for today. You've been described as a hero of January 6th. You nearly lost your life that day. You ended up isolated at one point in time before some of your fellow officers came to your rescue. So people call you a hero, and Donald Trump yesterday called himself a war hero. And I wanted to ask you, what does heroism mean to you? And is Donald Trump a war hero in your mind?
Well, first of all, I would have to say that characterizing me as a hero is extremely generous. I can't say I really agree with it, but that's part of the thing about heroes and society. As society chooses its heroes, heroes don't choose themselves. So I think that everyone would agree a big component of heroism is personal sacrifice, putting something or someone else ahead of your own well-being. And I don't think Donald Trump has ever done that in his life. Call himself a war hero when he dodged the draft. He hasn't fought in a battle. He hasn't fought in a war. He hasn't even been to basic training. So I think it's extremely disrespectful to our veterans, to actual war heroes, when he says something like that about himself.
Folks, again, if you're just joining us, that is D.C. Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges. You, as a D.C. Metro cop, you see protesters of all stripes, of all backgrounds, from all over. As folks are mobilizing across the country, as folks are engaging in greater numbers of protests than we've seen in a long time in this country, do you have some advice for people that want to engage in lawful and peaceful, responsible protests?
Sure. Know your rights. Exercise your rights responsibly is really the summation of it. You're allowed to record the police, but you know, please do so from a distance that allows law enforcement to do what it needs to do. If you know you're holding your phone up to my face like this, it makes it really difficult for me to do my job. But I want you to be able to, you know, practice your rights. So you're free to film me. Just, you know, take a few steps back, please. And if you find yourself being subject to arrest, or you feel like your rights are being violated, document everything as best you can, but don't fight on the street. You win the fight later in court. You're not going to win the fight on the street. So, you know, if your rights are being violated, just do your best to document and go along, as best you can with what's going on. And then try to win the fight later on at court.
One last very brief question. We've got about 30 seconds, Officer Hodges. Do you think it unusual or not a good practice for law enforcement officers to have facial coverings and refuse to identify themselves or their agency?
Absolutely not. It's seeing these people out here just grabbing brown people off the street with no identifying badges, no identifying agencies, masked up. As far as I'm concerned, that's armed kidnapping. And if I saw that taking place, I would treat it as armed kidnapping until they were able to prove their lawful authority to conduct an arrest and their lawful their status as a sworn law enforcement officer.
Folks, that's Officer Daniel Hodges. Thank you, Dan. We continue our discussion of what a real hero.
Next mistake, love's a game, wanna play.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big, big thanks to DC Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges for joining us again here on the Maggie Dawn Show. He works an evening shift, so he's doing this before he goes off to protect our nation's capital. Big thanks. There were two elements of the tail end of my discussion with Officer Hodges that I wanted to open up to all of you this afternoon for some thinking and some discussion. And the first piece of that this afternoon is talking about protesting and protesting smartly. We talked a little bit about this earlier this week, and I wanted to share with you some of the advice from various organizations that help organize protests in response to some of Donald Trump's unconstitutional anti-freedom actions. And we're going to put the links to one of these organizations. It's the freedcproject.org. It's freedcproject.org. They have an incredible set of resources there, specifically including a section about knowing your rights. Officer Hodges said, you know, you should protest if you feel motivated to do so, and you should advocate for yourself. And to do so, you have to know your rights. And he talked about filming the police. You have a right to film the police, but of course you need to stay out of their way and not impede what they're doing at all. So I wanted to go through a few of these things. Again, we'll put the website to the Free DC Project in our show notes for today. You can find those at civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere you get your podcasts. And we're also going to include the language from something I put together many, many, many moons ago, nearly, 25 years ago, back when I was in law school. In law school, a friend of mine, a colleague, had a business card that opened up, and inside the business card, they had printed for folks to use as they hand out their business cards what's called an invocation of rights. And so I'm going to read that to you, and we're going to put the entire language of that also in our show notes for today, in case you wish to carry around your own little pocket version of this or hand it out to all of your friends the next time you're at a No Kings protest or other protest. Works for anybody, no matter what you're protesting. And it includes a couple of the core ideas that you will see on the freedcproject.org Know Your Rights section. And again, part of that is about filming. And the second and third portions of that is specifically clarifying if you are free to go and your desire to end the interaction with whomever that officer is. In addition, the fact that you do not consent to a search is absolutely critical. If you are not consenting to a search, it means that they have to meet a higher standard before they even conduct a pat down. That's the reasonable suspicion standard under Terry. So I'm going to read that to you all. And again, all of this language we are going to duplicate and put on our show notes. You can find those in today's podcast notes once it goes online within a few minutes, typically of the end of our program. Here is the invocation of rights. When my 80 plus year old folks and their friends were going to the protests, I handed them each one of these business cards. And I said, if you are having any interaction with police that is not 1,000% friendly, this is what I want my dear parents saying. So here it is. This is your assertion of rights. Officer, please understand, I refuse to talk to you until I consult with my attorney. I also refuse to consent to any search of these premises or any other premises under my control or in which I have an interest, or my car, or my body, or effects. I desire to exercise all my rights guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States and the statutes and constitution of the state of Wisconsin. To be free from any of your interference with my person or affairs, I want to be left alone. If you attempt to question me, I want my lawyer present. I refuse to participate in any lineup without first conferring with my lawyer. If you ignore my exercise of these rights and attempt to procure a waiver, I want to confer with a lawyer prior to any conversations with you. I want to leave. If I am free to leave, please tell me immediately so that I may go about my business. Folks, knowing your rights is the first step to effective protesting and advocacy. Always, always follow the directions of law enforcement. Do not interfere or impede their law enforcement activities at all. That is a sure way to get arrested. If you are being arrested, as Officer Hodges pointed out, if there is some interaction, follow the directions of law enforcement. As Officer Hodges put it, you're going to get arrested, let them arrest you. Have the fight in court later. If you are stopped, if you are arrested, remain silent. Do not make any statements to law enforcement. You likely will have to affirmatively say, I am remaining silent. I do not want to speak with you. I wish to talk to a lawyer. You have to be direct. If you ask a question, can I talk to a lawyer? Is it okay for me to call a lawyer? Maybe I should call a lawyer. What do you think? None of that works. Any questioning of you, if you are being detained, must end. If you state, it must be a declaratory statement, I want to talk to a lawyer. As soon as you say that, they have to stop. Again, you can videotape and or record. Officers just don't get in their way. Another great resource for this kind of information is the National Lawyers Guild. There is a link to that on the website for this organization, Free DC Project. You can go directly to the National Lawyers Guild. But I highly recommend, if you are getting involved in protest activity, that you familiarize yourself with these basic invocations of your rights. Police officers are not required, other than when you are under arrest, okay? Short of arrest, they are not required to inform you of any of your rights. So please, again, it's up to you to advocate for your rights and to protect them, but always cooperate with law enforcement. Do not impede their activities at all whatsoever. I also wanted to share with you some tips for talking to the National Guard. These tips were drafted by veterans groups, including Veterans Against the War, GI Rights Hotlines, the War Registers League, as well as a variety of other organizations. Again, a link to this document will also be included today. These are veterans telling you what the best practices are when you may be interacting with National Guard's troops. Of course, if Donald Trump tries to unconstitutionally deploy the National Guard here in Milwaukee or Madison, and squelch our freedoms and our free speech rights here, we'll repeat these. But I wanted to give them now because I know that there are protests coming up this weekend, I believe on Saturday. So again, in an abundance of caution, if you are engaging with National Guards folks, again, everything that I just indicated, if they are working in tandem with police officers or other federal law enforcement, everything I just said about invoking your rights remains true. Here are some other things. Here, and again, this is coming from veterans. They advise folks to ask questions of National Guards members, not to lecture or scream at them. National Guards members may be expecting you to turn on a megaphone and start screaming in their face. Resist that urge. They suggest starting your interaction with a question like, hey, is this really what you thought you would be doing in the Guard when you signed up? Where are you from? When have you seen your family last? Some open-ended questions. And the second pointer is along the lines of that, prepare to just try to open up some space for a conversation to get the Guards member to start thinking about what they're doing. These can be very short. It can be very conversational. It's not about, you know, a list of talking points. Try to establish a connection. Hey, my husband, my wife, my father, my mom, they served. They were in the Wisconsin National Guard, or they served in this branch, et cetera, et cetera. And be real about what that their service, the impact on your family, and your admiration for what they do, if that applies. Pick your time and place. Approach with caution, but have a plan about what you want to say, and when you think, be strategic about if they can actually hear what you're saying, so that you can communicate effectively. There is a GI Rights Hotline number that you can hand them, which helps them understand what their rights are as a member of the National Guard. And they definitely advise to avoid things like saying, you signed up to fight the real enemy, and talking about real enemies, things like that, not super helpful. Again, it may be helpful to refresh the recent news about which military leaders have, typically retired military leaders, have spoken out against domestic deployments of the National Guard. Again, given that J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller today basically promised that we are going to see more of this sort of action other places, very, very critical to be aware of these things well ahead of time. The GI Rights Hotline, folks, is this number, 1-877-477-4487. This is 1-877-477-4487. You can also email and you can talk with other vets. if you are challenged, if somebody is in the National Guard and they're concerned about whether orders are legal or illegal, there is support there. The GI support email is support@aboutface.org. That is support@aboutface.org. We're going to put this entire document in our show notes for today. With that, I want to return to the concept of what truly is a hero in our country. What makes a hero? Because Donald Trump has declared himself one. We heard what Officer Hodges had to say about that. No one declares themselves a hero. Only we decide who our heroes are. So I want to hear from you. Do you have heroes in your life? What really makes a hero? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Who do you know who's a hero in your life? And how should we, as Americans of all political persuasions, define heroes? We're going to continue this discussion on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We have more breaking news. It never stops. California Democrats, about 20, 25 minutes ago, have passed a redistricting plan to counter Texas Republicans. This, according to reporting by the New York Times reporter Laurel Rosenthal. She writes, California lawmakers on Thursday approved a sweeping plan to elect more Democrats by redrawing congressional districts, delivering an immediate counterpunch to the gerrymandered map that Republicans in Texas are passing at the direction of President Trump. The Democratic-controlled legislature in California sent a package of redistricting bills to Governor Gavin Newsom, who intends to sign them on Thursday afternoon. The governor is also expected to declare a special election on November 4th that will ask voters to grant their final approval to the newly drawn congressional districts. Wow. Also, just moments ago, in a fractured ruling, the Supreme Court ruled by a 5-4 vote that the Trump administration could, for now, this is, again, the shadow docket, the emergency docket, ruled that the Trump administration can, for now, cancel more than $780 million in grants from the National Institutes of Health that the government said had been intended to explore topics like fairness, you know, what they like to call woke ideology, and vaccine hesitancy. But a different 5-justice majority of that same court lets stand for now a lower court's ruling that the administration's underlying policy directing the cuts was probably unlawful and should be put on hold. I'm sorry, make it make sense. Well, you can stop paying the grants, but we're pretty sure it's illegal. But do it any... I'm sorry, the Roberts Court is just an embarrassment on every single level. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the idea of what do we as Americans define as heroic? And I wanted to talk about this just very briefly this afternoon because Donald Trump told radio host Mark Levin this week that he's a war hero. He said this, referring to Benjamin Netanyahu. He's a war hero because we work together. He's a war hero, again, referring to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Trump continued and said, quote, I guess I am too. Nobody cares, but I am too. I mean, I sent those planes. End quote. This from a serial draft dodger, President Bonespur. This from the guy that disparaged prisoners of war, said he doesn't like people who get captured. He likes people that don't get captured. This from the man that dismissed war dead as suckers and losers. This from a man who stood in Arlington Cemetery next to a grave of a Marine who gave his life in service of this country, smiling with a thumbs up for a photo opportunity. This is the same Donald Trump who claimed himself to be a survivor of his own personal Vietnam because he didn't get an STD in the 90s, despite the presumably many, many, many women he was sleeping with, some when he was married. In an interview with Howard Stern, he said this, quote, "It's like Vietnam, sort of. It's my personal Vietnam. I feel like a great and brave soldier," end quote. This from a man whose administration sent out and posted to social media and promoted the photo of Donald Trump in a made-up military uniform that his prep school used on the anniversary of the Army's establishment, as if he was an actual soldier. No. He was a toy soldier. I've been hearing on the text lines, and we heard from Officer Hodges, that heroism requires personal sacrifice, and that a hero certainly can never declare themselves a hero. And it got me wondering, when is it okay, or when did it become okay and acceptable for someone to be the level of braggart with absolutely no there that Donald Trump is? When did conservatives and Republicans think that the chest-thumping, self-congratulatory, completely unsupported bravado of a draft dodger was the brand that they wanted for their party? I don't get it. I don't hear anyone in conservative radio talking about how despicable this is. That he considers himself a war hero when he has never served. When did we turn this page? When did we lose this formerly reverential respect that we have for the sacrifices of those in our military, as well as law enforcement? When did we lose the respect at such a great degree that we would elect someone like Donald Trump and then defend the most egregious violations of our shared and commonly held values? I don't know when this happened, but I know it has, and I know it can be fixed. And the way that we fix it, by listening to people like Officer Daniel Hodges, and by speaking up in our own way through protest and voting to make sure that we never elect a man so constitutionally unfit to be president that without serving a day in our military would have the audacity, the bravado, the ego, the self-centeredness to declare himself a war hero. Shame on you, Mr. President. That's going to do it for me. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.